everybody. Please allow myself to introduce myself. I'm your host, Captain Marvelous, and this is the 24th episode of I'm Batman, the podcast, the show where I chronologically review each and every episode of the 1992 Batman the Animated Series. Now, before we get to it, I want to thank everybody who participated in our contest. Congratulations once again to Frank Miller for winning the prize of the cereal box stuffed with stuffed. It was mailed, and you should be receiving it Monday or so. So congratulations. I hope you enjoy your gifts. Hopefully you'll share them with us on the Facebook page, which you could all join if you look for I'm Batman the Podcast on Facebook. So this week we got a really great episode, so let's get to it. This week's episode is titled Mad as a Hatter. Its original air date, October 12, 1992. The title card is a picture, or it's a classic illustration of the Mad Hatter from the Lewis Carroll book. So it looks creepy, because if you've ever read that book and you see these illustrations, yeah, they look pretty creepy. We start off with some white mice wearing little red hats, and they're acting like untrained animals because, well, they are. A small table and tea set is set up by someone. The person then puts on a headband, and this makes the mice start acting like civilized humans, and they have the most adorable tea party you've ever seen. The man, who we find out, is named Jervis Techt. Now, that always confused me. I always thought his name was Jervis Tech, like technology, but it's actually Techt. T-E-T-C-H. Jervis Techt. So, I don't know, I was confused for a bit. I'm glad that now that I'm doing this show, I could have gone back and just researched it, but you know, things stick in your mind. But I'm glad that I finally got the correct pronunciation. He is warned by a young blonde woman, a young blonde blue-eyed woman named Alice, that Bruce Wayne and Dr. Cates are walking that in their direction. Dr. Cates, who appears to be Jervis's boss, introduces Jervis to Bruce Wayne. And Bruce says that he read the report Jervis made on tapping the mind to its full potential, and he is very impressed. Jervis says that he's sorry because his prototype isn't ready to be shown, and Dr. Cates gets really angry at Jervis. Bruce says that he understands, and he leaves. Dr. Cates tells Techt that he got off easy, but next time, heads will roll. Get it? Like the Red Queen of a certain book whose cover illustration is hanging in Jervis's laboratory as a poster? Huh? It's pretty subtle. Alice consults Jervis, and Jervis seems very happy. Jervis mentions how Alice is the only person to understand them, and then she says, that's just what her boyfriend would say. I've been there. So Jervis' face goes from happy to angry faster than mine would. Alice mentions she's lucky to have two amazing men in her life, and she leaves for lunch. Jervis slams a picture of Alice and her beau down on her desk. Jervis is in his lab talking to his mind-controlled mice when he gives this amazing speech that I've probably given to myself numerous times.
Of course, intellectually, I know it's all wrong. She's got a boyfriend after all. Better to withdraw like a gentleman, forget her. Turn my heart to other pursuits. Never! Look, I've already developed a circuitry card powerful enough to control a human brain. It would be so easy to make her forget her boorish beau and love me. Ah. Ah, but that would reduce her to a soulless shell. Oh, no. Not my Alice. Oh. It's hopeless.
Ain't that the truth, brother? Jervis hears Alice crying over something, and he goes over to investigate. He sees Alice crying in the break room and says words that I say in my everyday life. And I'm not even joking here. Every day I say this, curiouser and curiouser. I know that's from the book and not actually from Batman. So, yeah, I'm not that dumb. Alice is crying because she wanted to talk with her boyfriend about their relationship, and he got angry and broke up with her. Now, this scene is weird because Dr. Cates, who from what we've seen so far, is very cold-hearted, mean woman. And she's consoling Alice instead of, like, yelling at her to get back to work. And if you ask me, that's actually what she should be doing because this is very unprofessional. Alice is, like, the receptionist secretary. And she's just letting the phone ring. Why? Because she's sad? Because she's crying? Because she has a little personal problem? Be professional, woman. Jervis is thrilled about the news, and he gives another great speech that, curiously, seems like something I've also said to myself before.
Oh, fatuous gay, kaloo, kalay! She's mine for the asking. I'll sweep her off her feet, treat her to a wonderful night on the town, and nothing. Oh, what could a beautiful girl like her ever see in someone like me? How could I impress her? How indeed?
So Jervis figures out a solution on how Alice will notice him. He grabs his mind control cards and he smiles. We are at Alice's apartment when Jervis shows up dressed to the T. He's wearing a long purple coat, lime green shirt with a huge black bow tie and an enormous top hat. He tells Alice that he's going to show her a night on the town and make her forget her troubles. We cut to the street near a park where the Batmobile drives by, and two thugs look angrily at it. Then the thugs see Alice and Jervis walking in the park and decide to rob them. Jervis isn't scared though, and he tells the guys not to force him to teach them a lesson. Jervis grabs two mind control cards and he places them in the convenient headbands that the thugs are wearing. Then the thugs go into a trance and apologize to Jarvis. Jervis, or Mr. Hat, as they call him. And Mr. Hat tells them to do something useful, like go jump off a bridge. And so they agree and they leave. We cut to Batman in the Batmobile patrolling the streets when his cop alarm goes off and he hears about two suicide attempts or attemptees at the Gotham Bridge. Batman shows up and he sees two men on top of the bridge. Then Batman uses an ejector seat in the Batmobile to launch him to the top of the bridge. He tells the two men to stop, but they just keep saying, Mr. Hat told us we should jump off the bridge. Then the thugs jump, taking Batman with them, and Batman uses a hang glider to save them all. They crash land on the bridge, and the thugs' mind control cards come off, and the thugs can't remember what happened. We cut to this fancy club where the cook and the entire staff are strangely wearing 10-6 sized cards on their heads, and they treat Jervis and Alice like they're stars, including this, I don't know if she's a waitress or if she's the hostess, but she takes a picture for their celebrity wall. So Alice is baffled because she's always seen Jervis as a quiet and shy type of person. Now I apologize. I do get this guy's name confused a lot. Jarvis, because if you're Jarvis, is actually the name of the butler for the Avengers in the Avengers comic book. Although most of you probably know him as Tony Stark's AI in the Avenger movies. But Jarvis, he's the Alfred to the Avengers. And I don't know, I keep getting the name confused. Jarvis. But this is actually Jervis Tetch. We cut to a park called Storybook Land, where Alice and Jervis are visiting after closing hours, of course, because the guard is controlled with one of the brain cards. Mr. Hat then has a wonderful dance with Alice through the giant flowers. So they have like this waltz between the giant display flowers. It's actually pretty nice. Back in the Batcave, and Alfred tells Bruce that the mind control cards look an awful lot like the ones from the Alice Adventures in Wonderland book. That's the full title, folks. Alice in Wonderland is the Disney movie. The book is actually called Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. It's there. Fun fact. You learned something today. Bruce mentions that he saw the poster of the Mad Hatter earlier in Jervis Tetch's laboratory. Jervis and Alice arrive from their date, and he, like a gentleman, of course, walks her to her door. Then when she walks in, she finds that her boyfriend, Billy, is standing there waiting for her. He gives her a flower, and all is forgiven, because, of course, it is. Because that's, you know, I'm not going to get into it. So let's just say that most women would play out this scenario. The next day at work, Jervis is dressed in the same suit and walking in with flowers. Alice walks up to Jervis and tells him that she and Billy made up and now they're engaged. Yeah, great relationship they're going to have there. Well, they're stupid crying over everything. Can't even control her emotions. Oh, I'm sad. I'm going to be sad and cry over everything. And then him getting angry and storming off whenever he feels like it. Yeah, it's a great start to a marriage there. It's going to be fun. Jervis gets so angry, he squeezes the bouquet of flowers until the thorns in the... I would say roses, but I think they're actually just flowers. But anyways, the thorns cause his hand to just bleed over the picture of Alice and Billy. Jervis walks into his lab and he is furious. Then Dr. Kate walks in and she is also furious because Bruce Wayne wants to see Jervis. And Jervis just tells her to shut up and he puts a card on her head to control her. Bruce Wayne walks in and he asks Alice if she has seen Dr. Kate or Jervis. And she tells Bruce that they left together earlier. Now Bruce is a bit confused by this because he noticed how Dr. Kate and Jervis didn't really get along earlier. Alice gets a phone call. And of course, she starts crying immediately because Billy just broke up with her. What the hell is she? Was she 12? Be professional, woman. No one wants to hear you or see you cry. Jeez. You figure the Mad Hatter could do for somebody better. That's my gripe here with the Mad Hatter. He seems like a very intelligent person. Yet he's like in love with this little like 18-year-old or something who can't seem to control her damn emotions. So Bruce notices that the picture with the blood stain on it. And then we cut to Billy's house, and we see that Jervis has placed a card on Billy's head controlling him, and he says, "All's fair in love and war." Alice is walking into her apartment when she sees that the place is filled to the brim with flowers, and she runs into Jervis. He tells her that he is sorry for the breakup with Billy, but she says that she hasn't told anyone about the breakup, so how does he know? So then Jervis really does get creepy, and he starts approaching her, but Batman, of course, shows up from behind and rescues her. Now, I want to point out, I haven't really described Jervis Tetch here, but he looks like Jeff Daniels does in the movie Dumb and Dumber. So just imagine this weird, big-nosed, blonde dude with messy hair and buck teeth. And yeah, he looks really, actually, very, very creepy. So Jervis, who is, we're just going to call the Mad Hatter at this point because he's already transformed, brings in some henchmen who are dressed like the Walrus and the Carpenter. Now, all these references, I'm saying Walrus, Carpenter, and all that, these are all from the book, once again from the book, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Some of the characters did appear in the movie, so you might know them. But yeah, they're all based on the Lewis Carroll book. So hopefully most of you know who they are, so I don't have to go into descriptions and such. But yeah, we get a Carpenter who's holding a giant sledgehammer, and a Walrus who has like these enormous tusks. They're wearing like weird Disneyland suits, like you'd go take a picture with Mickey at Disneyland. But for some reason, these suits decided to make these tusks on the Walrus out of like stainless steel or something because they penetrate through walls and everything. So Batman fights them, and Hatter runs away with Alice, who is now under mind control. He put one of his brain cards on her head. So Batman gets his butt kicked by both these guys. He's getting hit with a hammer, thrown around, until he manages to remove the mind control card from their head. Then they stop and wonder where they're at. Now, one of the costumes has a tag that reads Property of Storybook Land, so Batman knows exactly where to go look. We cut to Storybook Land, where Mad Hatter is holding Alice hostage, and Hatter has various people dressed as characters from Alice in Wonderland's story. Dr. Cates is now dressed as the Red Queen, and she yells, "Off with his head!" Whoa, remember when she said that earlier? It paid off. How's that for a novel concept? So all these people, they're just like the Cheshire Cat, the White Rabbit, the playing cards, the frog. They all start to just beat the crap out of Batman. And Hatter explains that his mind control card also gives the people extra strength. I have no idea how that works. Does having brain power all of a sudden make your muscles bigger or stronger? I don't know. So, Batman, he keeps getting beat up. But he manages to remove the card from Billy, who is dressed up like a frog. And Batman explains to Billy that the brainwashed people are programmed to fight him, not Billy. So Billy has to remove the cards from their head. And he does. He takes off their mask, removes the cards. So the victims are saved. And Batman chases Mad Hatter and Alice into a maze made out of cards, which is really weird because I believe in the book it was actually just a hedge maze. I don't know if it was actually made out of cards. Correct me if I'm wrong. Send your emails to Captain Marvelous1@yahoo.com. So Hatter then closes off the maze. Like, he starts closing all the different paths. But Batman is like, screw this noise. He just climbs to the top to find the Mad Hatter, which is something he probably should have done in the beginning. So Batman finds the Mad Hatter and they start fighting. Mad Hatter now has like this enormous axe, so that's why it's taking Batman longer than 5 minutes to beat the crap out of some scientist, who I'm sure has no experience fighting anybody. And Mad Hatter blames Batman for all of this?
I'll cut that cowl off your neck before you'll take her. I've waited my whole lonely life for her.
Then all you've waited for is a puppet. A soulless little doll.
It didn't have to be this way. You made me do this to her.
Okay, I'm sorry. How is this Batman's fault? Just because he showed up when Mad Hatter was gonna kidnap Alice? I don't get it. Jervis, or Mad Hatter, runs into the maze again. And he knocks some walls down on top of Batman, pinning him to the ground. So Jervis is about to kill Batman with the axe. He's really like going to decapitate him. But Batman tosses a batarang and he misses. Or does he? So the batarang hits this giant statue of the Jabberwock that's hanging like on the from a pole. And Batman manages to escape being pinned from the ground. But the enormous statue just falls on Mad Hatter, pinning him to the ground and causing Mad Hatter's hat to roll away. Batman grabs the hat and he breaks the mind control device hidden inside of it. Billy and Alice reunite and they hug in front of the Mad Hatter, who is now really sad. More like the Sad Hatter, am I right? And then the Mad Hatter says this poor little rhyme to himself.
Alice?
Oh, Billy!
Would not, could not. Oh, could not join the dance.
So Hatter just puts his head down in defeat. And we pan to a statue of the Mock Turtle crying at the moon. Then we fade to black. The end. Okay, some after show notes. I love this episode so much. I can totally relate with the Mad Hatter on this one. More than with Mr. Freeze or Two-Face. I just sympathize with Mad Hatter the most. And, you know, having that crush on someone that you can't have, going to any lengths to get even one night of happiness with them. I know that Mad Hatter was completely nuts and he did kidnap Alice and did a bunch of illegal things, but I still can't help but relate. The animation was done by Acom Productions. It's actually really good animation, even though the studio has been known for making some of the worst animation on the series thus far. The story is written by Paul Dini. Of course, that's why it's so excellent. And it does carry this episode. The animation could have been worse, but it still would have been a great episode. But they did a really good job with it. Roddy McDowall, the voice of the Mad Hatter, he had played a character of the Bookworm in the Batman 1966 series. A Bookworm was a criminal wearing a brown leather suit with thick glasses and a hat that had an Inspector Gadget-style magnifying glass coming out of the top. He committed crimes based on plots of books and left clues behind, so he was like a weird librarian Riddler or something. Although the Mad Hatter actually did make an appearance in the 1966 Batman show, played by David Wayne. Now, this Mad Hatter was very different from the one portrayed in this episode, and I'll explain why in a bit. This Mad Hatter was red-haired, he had a mustache, he was an older man who used hypnotizing. He had a hat that had two eyes come out of the top, which would shoot a hypnotizing ray, and that's how he would control people. The purpose of the Mad Hatter on the 66 show, though, was that he wanted to add Batman's cowl to complete his hat collection. Now, the reason he is different from the cartoon version we see in this week's episode is because he was actually based on what turned out to be a fake Mad Hatter. There was actually an imposter Mad Hatter. A Mad Hatter calling himself Jervis Tech appeared in Detective Comics number 230 in 1956. His appearance was that of a tall man with red hair and a mustache wearing this like gaudy green suit, and he had trick hats that he would use as weapons. So just like Penguin had all his trick umbrellas, Mad Hatter had a bunch of trick hats. It was later revealed, though, that this was actually an imposter, and he was later renamed Hatman. So yeah, that's a thing. And alright, let's get to the real Mad Hatter. Jervis Tetch made his debut in Detective Comics number 49 in 1948. His appearance was based on that of the illustration of the Lewis Carroll book. So if you see the title card from this episode, that's basically what he looked like in his first appearance in the comic book. He was a short man with a big head and a giant top hat, like huge nose. He robbed some trophies from a yacht club until he was captured by Batman and sent to Arkham. And that Mad Hatter was not seen in comics again until Detective Comics 573 in 1987. That's 39 years. Now, in between those 39 years, we had the imposter Mad Hatter. But that's a long time. That's almost as long as Two-Face disappeared. In his return, he would kidnap Lucius Fox in an attempt to steal Lucius's knowledge and make himself a fortune with it. But of course, he is stopped by Batman. And after that, he's become one of Batman's most enduring foes. And I'm going to save some more facts for later because he will be seen again. And a lot sooner than you think, actually. As mentioned earlier, Hatter's appearance is always changing. In his debut, he was a short little man with a big nose who looked like the classic illustration. Then he was drawn as an average height man with red hair and a mustache. And although that turned out to be the imposter. He then later showed up and was again a short man with a huge hat and big buck teeth. And then in the cartoon, he was redesigned as, again, a person of average height. Kind of tall, actually. I think he's about Batman's height. And Batman's, like, believe, like, 6 foot something, 6 foot two or something like that. So this guy's actually pretty tall for as we're used to the character. He has, like I said, messy blonde hair, huge overbite. He resembles Jeff Daniels in the Dumb and Dumber movies, as I mentioned before. I always thought that would be a great pick for him if they ever portrayed him in a live-action movie. Also, my second pick for Mad Hatter would be Martin Short. There's an episode of Law & Order where Martin Short plays a con sidekick, and he nails the Mad Hatter role in that episode, actually. Now, later in the series, the characters would be redesigned. And Mad Hatter got a redesign. He became once again very short. Like about the size of Robin. Like, and I mean like the little kid Robin. Not teenager Robin. So he's like the size of like a 10-year-old for some reason. And he has like a very elf-like appearance. Like very elf-like. He has pointy ears. And his face kind of looks rat-like. Like very pointy with little eyes. And like little rabbit teeth. Actually, I'm not a big fan of that redesign. Now, in the new comics, he is once again very short, buck-toothed, big-nosed. But he is suffering from a disease. I forgot the name of the disease. I didn't write it down. Sorry about that. But he suffers from that disease that doesn't allow people to age normally. So, a little spoiler here. That's actually the same case we're going to get with a later villain named Baby Doll. So, in the comic book, they gave Mad Hatter Baby Doll's disease for some reason to explain why he's like this little short man. Alright, the But Batman segment. Not many complaints, actually. My main complaint is actually not even on this episode or on the show in general. But I just want to say, I hate the fact that if you research Mad Hatter, you have to wait through, like, stupid pictures and articles of Johnny Depp and that horrible, horrible movie before you reach anything Lewis Carroll or Batman related. So I just want to point that out. And also, my other complaint is this. I have a question. How was Jervis getting his mind control cards on everyone's heads before he arrived with Alice on their date? Like, did he get to the restaurant and tell Alice, wait for me 10 minutes? And then he went around putting cards on everybody? Seems a little weird.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Alright, it's time for the Batcave Archives. This is episode 24, So we have a list of 23 episodes that we have ranked so far. At number one, we have Heart of Ice, the Mr. Freeze origin still. And at a very close number two, we have Two-Face Part 1. And I always mention those two because they're like neck and neck. The only reason Two-Face got number two instead of number one is because it was split into two parts. And we here on this show, we treat each episode as an individual. So even though the story of Two-Face was a better story than the Mr. Freeze, the fact that it got divided into two lowered it a bit just because the second part wasn't as good as the first, even though it's actually number four on the list, so it's still really freaking good. But anyways, I digress. Let's get back to the list. Where would I rank this episode? This is, personally, I really, really like this episode. As I said, I can't help but relate and put myself in the shoes of the Mad Hatter in this. And I see him, I take his point of view. I'm sorry, I just, I don't know what that says about me. But that makes me a bit biased in this episode. So I may rank it a little bit higher than maybe it belongs. At the middle of the list, we have the POV, which is another great episode where everybody tells everything on their point of view. Number 11, we have On Leather Wings. On Leather Wings, I've kept so high. The story is kind of by the numbers, but the animation is so amazing. Geez, this is so hard. I think from the episodes we've seen so far, I would actually rank this one in the top 10. At number 10, we actually have The Cat in the Claw Part 1, which was our first episode of the series, the pilot episode, which was another two-parter, but this episode is so much better than that. The Fear of Victory at number 9, that's the one where Scarecrow fixes the games with the fear gas. I think this is a much better episode than that. At number 8, Vendetta, the Killer Croc origin. This is tough because that was a really great episode as well. And it was such a throwback to the pulp comics and the crime noir stories. It really, really worked. Joker's Favor is right above that. And that's the episode where Charlie owes Joker a favor. Whew, this one's really hard. I think I'm actually going to put this one in between those two. So our new number 8 will be Mad as a Hatter, right underneath Joker's Favor and right above Vendetta. Now remember, if you want to see the full list of the Batcave archives, you can go to our Facebook group and join the I'm Batman the podcast, where it remains as the pinned post, so you can see the list. I update it each and every week when we do the show. So you can go there, look at the list. You can also chat with some of our other members of the I'm Batman family. And just be sure to join. It's a cool group. Put up pictures and such, jokes, and it's very non-threatening. So don't feel like, well, I've never watched Batman before, but I really am interested, but maybe these guys will tear me apart because I don't know anything about it. Don't worry. We all like to have fun. There's nobody that's going to bully you on there. No cyberbullying on our I'm Batman the podcast fan page. All right, I think that's going to be it for the show this week. But before we go, I do want to mention some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that's going on. I am planning to do a little bit of change to the show. I thought it would be a fun idea if the last week of each month I do a movie review instead of an episode of the show. I really do. I've enjoyed the ones we've done so far, the review of the Batman and Robin, and also the review we did last week of the Batman the Movie 1966. I really had fun doing those. So I think at the end of each month, the last week, we might do a Gotham Goes Hollywood, I'm going to call it, where I do review a Batman, different Batman movie. We have plenty of them to choose from. There's at least 10. We went through the list of those last week. But I did July 1st for the Batman the Movie, I might not do it until August. So I think that's when I might start doing them. And of course, the first movie I'm going to do for this, it's going to be Batman, Tim Burton film, 1989. So really looking forward to that. On a personal note, I'm going to go to the Warner Brothers studio, actually, where they have set up a exhibition of the a lot of the Batman films, the Batman v Superman. They have all the costumes and props from the movie. They also have props and costumes from the Suicide Squad, But what I'm most excited about is they have an exhibition with every single Batmobile from every movie. I can't wait to see that. So I'll give you a review of that if it's worth going. I'll do that next week. And I think that's going to be it for the show, everybody. Thank you for listening. Remember, if you have any thoughts on the episode that I reviewed today, or if you have any thoughts, questions, suggestions on the show itself, send them to captain_marvelous1@yahoo.com. Just like the winner of our cereal box stuffed with stuffed contest has done. This is from Frank Miller himself. He writes, "Hey, Captain. First, let me say that I'm happy that you love my comics." Right. I wish I was that Frank Miller. "I'm just a guy that loves Batman. I've followed your podcast exploits for some time now, and I'm so happy to have won this giveaway. I'm a lifelong fan of Batman, and the animated series is one of my favorite animated shows of all time. I've particularly loved this podcast. Candy has been a great co-host, and Mr. Mutant Larry is always a pleasure to listen to. Your insights on animation and sets have been fascinating. My personal favorite episodes of this show are The Grey Ghost, with a very special guest star, and an episode called Perchance to Dream. I can't wait until you get to these episodes, and I hope they hold as well as they do in my memory. Before I ramble too long, here's my shipping info." And he gives me his address, which I'm not going to read. He gives me some fun facts here, though. Fun fact 1. Deborah Hill, the co-writer of the original Halloween series, grew up in my town and based the town in the movie in it. Fun fact number 2. Frank Gorshin's son, Mitchell, owns a store here in Haddonfield called Gorshin's Trading Post. "Once again, thanks for a great show, thanks for this giveaway, and keep up the great work. Frank Miller." So thank you, Frank Miller, for writing in. I really appreciate you doing that. And to answer your question, Perchance to Dream is actually coming up in 2 weeks. Next week we have a episode called The Cape and Cowl Conspiracy, and the week after that it's actually Perchance to Dream, so that's coming up very soon. The fun fact number 1, Deborah Hill basing the town on your town there, that's actually very cool. I'm a huge horror movie fan, so I love to hear about things like this. And number 2, Frank Gorshin's son having a star there, that's pretty awesome, because Frank Gorshin was just an amazing, amazing actor. So that's really fun to hear. Once again, everybody, thank you. I have been your host, Captain Marvelous. And remember, no matter where you're from, no matter who you are, we are Batman.